The Neighbors, a short story written and narrated by Shirley Hyatt from her book of short stories, 20 Tales with a Twist.
School was out for the summer. Up and down the streets, mothers put on cotton dresses, tied aprons around their waists, and went into their kitchens to prepare a good breakfast for their children. This was to be a very special day. The air filled with the scent of bacon frying, bread toasting, eggs whipped up and salt and peppered. Drifting above it all was the aroma of freshly brewed coffee. Children's voices rose and fell as they put on t-shirts and shorts and rolled bottles of suntan lotion and spanking new bathing suits inside beach towels they stuffed into tote bags. Fathers in undershirts and bedroom slippers stepped out their front doors in search of the morning paper. In the kitchen at 903 Spruce Street, two young boys were giddy over the idea of spending the day at the new public swimming pool. This was no ordinary pool, they announced to one another. It had a low dive and a high dive, and it had a turquoise-colored spiral slide that, from 15 feet in the air, would send them hurtling into the cool water. And the city had built a new snack shack that offered not only snow cones but soft ice cream. Every child in the county was excited. Who wouldn't be? The ribbon-cutting ceremony would take place at 10 o'clock sharp, and then girls with their hair in ponytails would strut around the pool pretending they didn't want to get wet, while boys cannonballed into the chlorine-laced water, causing them to squeal in feigned horror. Mrs. Brown put two slices of bread into the toaster and pushed down the lever. While her two boys chattered, she looked at their shining, innocent faces, and her mind drifted back again to what might have been. What might have been was that one of those boys should have been a girl. But the gods had been against her. Her eyes settled on Robbie and Richie, wiggling in their seats, their heads bobbing up and down. They were almost airborne, they were so excited. Little boys were wonderful, lovely actually, she thought. But she had set her heart on having a girl. The doctor's kind but final words, that there would be no girl because there would be no more children, should have put an end to her dream, but it hadn't. She still had the desire to run a brush through curls and tie pink ribbons into them. That image had stayed in her mind. She loved to sew and had hoped to show off a child in lace-trimmed dresses of her own design. Hardly a day went by that she didn't picture herself with a precious little girl in her arms. Sandra Brown started at the metallic click of the toast popping up. She plucked the slices out and quickly spread them with butter. "Now, boys," she said, demanding their attention, "please chew slowly so your bodies can process your food and give you the energy you'll need. And remember, if you have a snack at the pool, you must sit down for at least a half hour before going back in. I don't want you getting a cramp." "We know, Mom, we're not babies," Richie said, poking his older brother, who responded with, "Yeah, Mom, he's 8 and I'm almost 10. 10 years old, Mrs. Brown thought, as his birth flashed into her mind's eye. After she had recouped from hours of intense labor, she'd felt an overwhelming sadness to learn that she had produced a boy instead of the baby girl she had prayed for. But she'd put that disappointment aside, and soon she'd loved him, both of them. Although they had truly been a handful, and certainly much harder to raise than a girl would have been, of that she was certain. Mr. Brown came into the kitchen and poured himself a cup of coffee. "You going to walk with the boys over to the new pool?" he asked. Turning her face up to receive his kiss, Sandra said, "Yes, George, I think I will. It's a nice morning, and I want to be there for the ribbon cutting and see that the boys understand the rules. I'll stay for a while, and then I think I'll just come home and finish up some mending." "They got a lifeguard and everything, Dad," Robbie blurted out, "and Mom doesn't have to watch us." "It's got a slide, too," his brother added, his eyebrows rising into his hairline. George reached out his hand to pat his sons on their shoulders. "Well, you boys take care and mind what your mother says. I've got to go to work." He kissed his wife and, picking up a piece of toast, waved it at her as he walked out the door. Mrs. Brown sighed. "Okay, boys, finish up, brush your teeth, go to the bathroom, and don't forget to wash your hands. I'll wait on the porch. We're not babies, the boys laughed as they raced up the stairs. Mrs. Brown knew she did herself no favors by dwelling on what would never be. Nevertheless, the image of a little girl drifted into her mind. She hung her apron on a hook, stood on the front porch, and took in a long breath. Her eyes traveled over the street they had lived in since she and George married nearly 12 years ago. It was well-ordered, with lawns mowed and trimmed and cars parked in garages, not on the driveway where they might leave ugly patches of oil on the cement. She knew every neighbor, every cat and dog on both sides of the street. It was a nice street, except for the house next door that had been vacant since anyone could remember. Sandra sucked in a breath. She couldn't believe her eyes. The decrepit house was buzzing with activity. The ancient window shades were rolled up to the top, letting in the light, and the windows were open, letting out the sound of children shrieking. There was an intermittent, sharp chastisement she assigned to an adult male. If there was a woman's voice inside the place, it was lost in the general hubbub. Grasping the porch railing, she wondered what in the world had happened in a house that had stopped being a topic of conversation ages ago. Nobody could remember who owned it or who the last tenants had been. It had sat there year after year, becoming as common a sight as a fire hydrant or a broken piece of sidewalk that people automatically stepped over without any conscious thought. What in the world? She said. How could she have slept through the activity of a family moving into that house? She would have heard something, wouldn't she? One street over, the mongrel dog had barked at the guy on the motorbike who cranked it up at 5:30 every morning, but that was nothing new. She was used to hearing him rattle down the street, and even if it woke her up, she always went right back to sleep. No, there was nothing unusual that happened, alerting her to the surprising event. Nothing at all. The new neighbors just seemed to appear like a mushroom in the middle of a perfect lawn, or a fruit tree that overnight was discovered to be covered in tiny pink flowers. It was no secret that the neighborhood teenagers had pried open the rotting cellar door on the old place, sneaking inside to create a kind of clubhouse, a place to tell ghost stories and play spin the bottle. It had become a rite of passage to gather in the back bedroom, candles stuck to the wood floor in their own soft wax, the fluttering flames casting shadows into the cobwebs. The place was haunted, everyone agreed, and they were very brave to sit there. Yes, they were all very brave, the boys with their arms around the girls, protecting them against the unknown. As Sandra contemplated the value of simply walking next door to introduce herself, thereby getting the answers to all the questions that had sprung up, her boys flew out, slamming the screen door. Come on, Mom! They were halfway down the steps when both boys stopped and pointed. Mom, there's people in there! Robbie faced her wide-eyed. Yes, I see that, Sandra said thoughtfully. I was just trying to decide if we should go over and say hello. Not now, Mom. We gotta go swimming. One on either side, the boys took her hands and pulled her down the steps and along the sidewalk. A little girl left the cluster of noisy children on the porch of the old house and ran up to them. Hey there, I'm Susie. Where are you all going? Mrs. Brown was so startled she couldn't think what to say. She studied the child, seeing large blue eyes and dark hair hanging to her shoulders in a tangled mass of curls. The hem of her cotton dress had been let down and not finished off properly. It had been washed so hard it was close to falling apart. Why wasn't she being better cared for? Sandra thought. Her heart seemed to turn over, and the words simply fell out of her mouth. We're going for a swim at the new pool. Would you like to come along? Mom, what are you doing? Rob whispered, squeezing her hand. Never mind, she told him. Bending down, she said, We'll wait right here while you ask your mother if it's okay to come with us. Susie's pretty face broke into a smile as she turned and fled into the house. Mom, let's go, Ricky urged. His mother trained hard eyes on him. Look, we're going to wait right here, and if she wants to come with us, we'll take her. She's a little girl, for Pete's sake. Where are your manners? But I thought, the boy began. I know what you thought, and I know what I thought, but I've changed my mind. The child soon came skipping back to them, her smile showing a missing front tooth. I'm going to come with you. Mrs. Brown felt an overwhelming surge of happiness. Oh, good. Did you bring a bathing suit? It's under my dress. Susie giggled, pulling up the thin skirt to show a swath of shiny pink nylon. The girl's demeanor, her seeming lightness of spirit, everything about her, caught at Sandra's heart. She had a feeling of anticipation as Susie took her hand and began to chatter. We came up from California. Sometimes we stopped, but mostly we kept going. You know this one time back in California? This mouse was running around in our old kitchen when Daddy was making bacon, and he caught it and fried it right up. We didn't eat it, though. Mrs. Brown didn't know whether to laugh or cry. She took in a quick breath and said, Oh my, what an interesting story. Susie continued, And you know, this one other time Daddy took the gun outside and we heard him shoot it bang, bang. He'd come back in and he said not to look for Santa to come to our house anymore because he'd shot him dead. We still get some candy, though, if we're good. Mrs. Brown shuddered. Poor child, could that terrible story be true? If so, that man was clearly dangerous. Her own children were undoubtedly too surprised and shocked by the little story to respond. They walked on in silence until they were at the park, where it seemed like everyone in the entire state had flocked to the new swimming pool. The boys broke free and raced to the bathhouse, where they were quick to peel off their clothes and get into their suits. After all the initial excitement died down, Sandra knew she couldn't leave as she'd planned. She simply couldn't walk away from the little girl who had put herself in her care. The boys were okay. They were happy to slide into the pool over and over again, backwards, head first, every way they could think of. So taking off her shoes and pulling her skirt above her knees, Sandra sat on the steps at the shallow end of the pool like a mother bird, guarding her only chick, and found pleasure in watching Susie splash and laugh. It was nearly 4 in the afternoon when Sandra rounded up the boys and headed for home. Susie was quiet, holding tightly to Mrs. Brown's hand. She looked up, tears pooling in her eyes. Can I come live with you? Oh, my dear child, Mrs. Brown said, biting her lip. How hard her young life must be to ask an almost complete stranger to take her in. And yet, she didn't feel like a complete stranger, not at all. As they turned the corner onto Spruce Street, Mrs. Brown looked at the old house and saw it was as it had always been. Blinds down, windows closed, no sign of life. Susie looked up at Sandra and said, Oh, good, I just prayed and prayed. Sandra felt a moment of extreme joy. Like Susie, she had prayed and prayed, and now those two powerful desires had overcome the universal order and come into being. Reached down, she gathered little girl in her arms. Come on, kids, time for dinner. The end.